Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, April 23rd, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Anastasia. Lavendar is busy preparing for our crystal quest this evening, which starts this weekend, but she'll be back with us when we return from Arkansas, and we'll be there for the next three Tuesdays, and then we'll be back to our regular weekly shows starting on May 21st. But we do have 3 years' worth of archives to keep you busy while we're away, and we will look forward to being back on the air on the 21st. Our featured guest this evening is Gwilda Wiaka, a shaman whose new book is called So We're Still Here, Now What? Spiritual Evolution and Personal Empowerment in the New Era. She delves deeply into the hidden principles behind effective shamanic practices, which have been used since ancient times, and offers modern-day applications to help people navigate and learn to use the energies to support longevity, personal power, and manifestation. She is a preceptor for the University of Colorado School of Medicine and provides instruction to medical doctors to interface shamanism and allopathic medicine. She's also the founder of Path Home Shamanic Arts School, where she implements her experience of 30 years of private practice as a shamanic practitioner and teacher. Her website is GwildaWiaka.com, and that is spelled GwildaWiaka.com. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics of interest to Starseed and sharing some emails from our listeners. We'd like to thank Chris for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. And please remember to click follow on our show page if you like the show. If you're joining us for the first time, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where you can find a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. And the entire site has been coded for Starseed activations. We have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose and Tammy for their great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go, or download them right from our show page archives. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. And do keep in mind, though, that we're going to be gone for 3 weeks. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions with Tammy are also available. If you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And normally we ask for 2 weeks ahead of time, but we're going to be leaving, so I hope your birthday is not within the next 3 weeks, or if you have not already gotten your solar return calculation, there's probably some places online where you could find it while we're gone. So now I would like to introduce my co-host, who is not showing up. Oh, my gosh. I don't think I'm on the air. Waiting for host.
Thank you.
Well, there is some really strange stuff going on. I just talked to Anastasia, and she said that we are on the air, but I'm not seeing it on the switchboard, so this could have something to do with my computer completely getting wiped out yesterday. So hang on a second as I'm trying to fix this. Hang on. So it doesn't look like I'm seeing the switchboard, and I'm just hoping that you all can hear me. I think this is connected to my computer crashing yesterday, so absolutely not showing up on my screen because it's not quite back yet. So, Chris, if you can hear me, would you please bring Anastasia on?
Hey, can you hear me? It's Anastasia.
Yes, I can hear you.
Well, hello, everybody. Wow. I think we're up and running now.
Well, I cannot see the switchboard, so I'm going to have to do things verbally. Yeah, this is connected. My computer completely got wiped out yesterday, and I've been working frantically to rebuild the essentials, and maybe I don't have my flash player up or something, but at any rate.
Well, you're a trooper. The show must go on.
Sweating bullets.
I actually have it on in the other room, and you're broadcasting fine, so we're live.
Okay, so.
And I guess Chris must have heard you because she put me on. I've been on. I got kicked off once, but so I think Chris can probably follow instructions, even if you can't communicate with her, because she put me on. So I hope that that works with our guest tonight.
Okay. Boy, I'm telling you, I feel like I've been going around in a blender.
Oh, well, bless your heart. That's a pretty... sense of humor.
Thank you so much for at least calling me to let me know. I'm thinking like... You're talking to no one. So you heard my introduction and everything?
Yes, everything. We're good to go. We really are. You did a great job. Everything was fine. And so I'm sure our listeners
laugh,
love
we'll
us. They
cry,
understand.
So let's laugh.
They're having a good chuckle with us. It's great.
Okay. Take it away.
Okay.
Take it away.
Good evening, everybody. I'm so happy to be with you, and Ariel is as well. And so we'll start off tonight's Starseed News. So let's get started. I guess maybe all of you have been aware that the Lyrid meteor shower has been going on, and it peaked over the weekend. They said that over the during the peak time, international observers around the world said that the meteor shower produced as many as 25 meteors per hour. They were a little bit disappointed. They thought that that was sort of a non-stellar performance, but in any event, some of these were fireballs. And these may have been connected to some of the fireballs that were seen around the world in the last number of days. A Starseed listener sent me this link to a story, which was wonderful, and then it came across my newswire through other means, so it's now gone viral. Everyone's heard about it. But there was a meteor that interrupted a concert in Argentina, and I watched the video. There was video footage that was captured Sunday morning in Argentina during a band performance. And during the concert, a bright light appeared in the sky to the right of the stage. It started off as a little greenish glow, and then it just became brighter and brighter, and then completely whited out the sky as it fell to the earth. So there was a lot of witnesses to that one, and it was a bright flash. I mean, a major flash. It whited out the camera momentarily. And there was also, another meteor shower going on the other part of Argentina. Fireballs have been relatively quiet, according to my records, but they're still incoming. And there was a big boom in southern Connecticut just the other day. Now, nobody knows what caused that. It was in New Haven County Friday evening. People called 911, and people hit the panic button. They didn't know what it was. It it caused a little shaking, the rattling and so on. So any starseed up in that area, if you have heard about that or you felt it, I'd like to hear from you. And I think that they're still waiting to know what it was because there was no known cause. Still more big booms across the planet. Nobody knows the source of them. Well, I want to talk to you for a second tonight about climate change. You know, we've heard a tremendous amount about global warming. But according to some experts, the global mean temperature has dropped 1 centigrade since 1990. Now, you know, when we really stand back and look about it, the evidence of the weather that we've seen across the planet in the last year and a half, the cool temperatures, Great Britain and the northern latitudes suffering a tremendous cold, and then Minnesota having that serious snowfall and bitter cold just a few days ago. I mean, it's pretty apparent that the climate is cooling down, and there are actually research studies that show that this is indeed a fact. A climatologist, or I should say a renewable energy critic, named Rainier Hoffman, has researched the literature on the mean global temperature, and he has found that something isn't right with the figures coming from the world's leading climate experts. The figures tell us that the mean global temperature has dropped 1 centigrade over the last 25 years, and at that rate, we could be in an ice age by the year 2100 if it continues. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of conflict and questionable statistics regarding global warming. And I think that it's important that we kind of hold our opinions in abeyance because there is definitely enough evidence that we may be entering another ice age or a period of global cooling. So before we begin to parrot what we've been told about global warming, we need to be informed that there are definitely statistics out there that contradict that. So I just want to pass that along. You know, they're doing a lot to change the lifestyles of people and making a lot of laws and enforcing a lot of things that may not be necessary at all, considering that global warming is still, despite the mainstream's contention that it is absolutely valid, it is still a contended claim. You know, we've been talking over a period of time about the bees and the dying off of the bees. Well, Science Daily had an article that there are a number of pollinating insects all across the world that are being threatened. They say that there is a new review of insect pollinators, and that includes all kinds of insects that pollinate crops and wild plants, that they say that now are under threat globally from just a whole assortment of multiple pressures. And they think that the decline of the multiple pollinating insects is going to have large environmental and human and economic consequences. They say that insects provide pollination services to about 75% of crop species and enable reproduction in up to 94% of wildflowering plants. So breezes and winds don't do it. We need our pollinating insects to assure the health of plants and the reproduction of plant life. And so this is something that's a great concern out there, not just the bees, but all pollinating insects seem to be struggling with the things that are going on. A lot of it is pesticides, encroachment of wild territory, things like that. But that's something to be aware of. And, you know, a long time ago, I quit using pesticides in my garden. I never kill a dandelion. In fact, I eat them. They're actually quite healthy. We need to change our viewpoints, and I'm sure a lot of our starseeds understand that. Of course they do. But be a force for change in the world and in the people around us to adjust our thinking regarding the use of pesticides and toxic substances. And maybe we can turn the tide to help our insect friends that we need and all the other little critters and animals that have been harmed by our over-grooming the wild planet. And going on in Pakistan, this is sort of a disturbing thing, but you know, birds have been suffering across the planet. There was a storm in Pakistan that occurred over the weekend that they say knocked 10,000 birds out of their trees. There were birds that were roosting in the branches of mahogany trees, but the rainfall was so heavy in a couple of villages that it washed the birds out of the trees and drowned them. Now, that is absolutely a downpour. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I've lived a long time and never seen a bird washed out of a tree. So that is a very heavy rainfall. And in Utah, where I used to live for a number of years, it's disturbing, but it happened that more than 12,000 birds crashed in the Dugway Proving Grounds. These are eared grebes, and they were killed after their crash landings at the U.S. Army's Dugway Proving Ground. Now, this is a sort of a salt flat, and during a storm, the birds got confused. They were migrating over the area. There were 12,000 or 13,000 water birds that were migrating over the Great Salt Lake for the summer, but they became disoriented by the snow and fog, and they thought that the wet roads and the parking lots were water. And so they landed. And because they can't take off from the ground, these birds are built for water, they were stranded, and many of them, died. There was a big rescue mission to pick them up and take them away in pickups. They say that it's about 8,000 of them survived out of about 13,000. People just went and picked them up and then drove them to ponds so that they could take off. But we don't think about water birds not being able to take off on the ground, but they can't. And so they got disoriented and had to be rescued. So the weather has been crazy everywhere, and finally, like we talked about last week, Ariel, it's turning spring in the south, but it's up and down because in our area there is a prediction of frost, 32 degrees tomorrow night. So spring is having a tough start in the south, and is that what you're experiencing in your area as well?
Well, no, it's
finally... Has it been going up and down?
Well, yeah, the temperature's been going up and down, but everything bloomed all at one time. So
yes.
That's kind of pretty. But, yeah, the nights are still a little chilly.
Well, we're watching our fruit blossoms here, wondering if they're going to make it. But the weather really has been erratic. And, like I said earlier, Minnesota just had that awful snow. So, anyway, we will slowly, joltingly arrive into springtime. The major part of the country, anyway, is going to be a little slow in getting there. Well, we hear a lot about drones in the sky, and there's a lot of talk about using drones for multiple purposes, corporations, universities, not to mention the military, police departments, and so on, are all looking forward to using drones to surveil territory, cities, streets, and so on. But there is a new thing afoot, and I may have spoken about it before. This is an article from the Rutherford Institute, and they say that drones now are going to turn the world's technology, much like gunpowder, the steam engine, and the atomic bomb changed life on Earth and opened up risks and perils unknown a generation ago, because these drones that they're talking about are very, very tiny drones. They're going to be insect drones, and actually they had posted pictures of these, a mosquito drone that absolutely looked like a mosquito. These are little tiny machines that have cameras and that can fly and that can be directed. They're nano in size, many of them. They're working on developing these to fly them through city streets and actually to enter buildings, bugs under cracks and so on, that can surveil cityscapes and public events for long periods of time, providing a means of 24/7 surveillance. So this is what they're working on now, and they think that about 30,000 drones will occupy U.S. airspace by 2020. And they say this will amount to a $30 billion per year industry, $30 billion per year. 30,000 drones they're anticipating in U.S. airspace by 2020, the size of insects. So that's pretty weird stuff. But I got some happy stories, and one of them came from you, Ariel. And before I read that wonderful story, I want to share with you a story that came out of CBS. An airman, a military man who was in Afghanistan, was reunited with a dog that he had rescued in Afghanistan. The man is 25 years old, by the way, and his dog is a six-month-old Afghan hound. And they met in Afghanistan. He found the puppy foraging through trash. He was starved. So the airman took him into the the quarters, the barracks, and fed her, and fell in love with her. And he shared the barracks with 15 other guys, and the dog was very, very happy. He named her, what did he name her now? I don't know now. Lila, that was Lila. And they became the best friends, but of course, ultimately, he had to be transferred. And he was transferred back to the States, and he discovered that he couldn't take her with him, even though all that time she was in the barracks, she slept in his bed, and he fed her from the chow hall, and she had a cozy home and was safe and well-loved by all these airmen. When he came to time to come to the U.S., he couldn't bring her because it was going to cost $4,000. So he didn't know what to do. And somebody had posted on a site that rescues animals, the Puppy Rescue Mission, raised money to bring these two together. And so the Puppy Rescue Mission raised the funds and reunited this airman with his dog, Lila. And so that's a very happy thing, and there's pictures of the two of them together. And they actually, the rescue mission said that they decided to do that because they knew that the dog would not live if it weren't flown home to be with the man, because the dogs in Afghanistan are starving and didn't have a chance at living. So that's a wonderful story. And also, Ariel, I want to thank you for this great story. And this is sort of bittersweet, you know, when we think about animals, and all of us just have, I know, all of us starseed have tremendous compassion for animals, and those of us that are shamans as well, of course, especially. And there are so many animals in the world that suffer, you know, and there's so much suffering, but we just do the best we can. And this is a story about the stray dogs in Russia. And I had never heard this, Ariel, until you sent this to me. The dogs in Russia, there are a lot of stray ones. And every morning, around Moscow anyway, these stray dogs board the subway like clockwork. And they begin a daily commute to the center of town where they can get food. Isn't that something? I mean, these stray dogs, they live in the outskirts of Moscow, and they commute on the underground trains to and from the city, and they look for food scraps that way. And after a hard day of begging on the streets, they hop back on the train and return to the suburbs where they spend the night. Now, experts have studied these dogs, and they say that they usually choose the quietest carriages at the front and back of the train, and that the dogs work together to make sure they get off at the right stop after they learn to judge the length of time that they need to spend on the train. And they said that this phenomenon began after the Soviet Union collapsed in the 1990s, and Russia's capitalists moved their industrial complexes from the city center to the suburbs. And they say that these dogs look out after each other, and they're smart enough to know to make friends with people on the train, and that, you know, they jump on the train seconds before the door shut. They even risk their tails getting jammed, but they say that they are well adapted to this. And they sometimes fall asleep, and they get off at the wrong stop sometimes, but they've learned to use traffic lights to cross the road. This is what this article says. And they use tactics to with the passengers on the train to gain snacks or, you know, for people to feed them. So they know how to get people's sympathy, and they've learned to adapt. Isn't that just a remarkable story? Of course it is. You know it is. You sent it to me. And I wish the Starseed could see the pictures of those big dogs laying asleep on these train cars. And the train cars themselves look pretty impoverished. I mean, you know. So anyway, animals and consciousness, it is an absolute fact that animals are conscious and far more aware than the average person has any idea of. This is another one of those stories that proves that. So that's it for tonight's Starseed News. I'm ready to get on with our guest, Ariel, if you're ready.
Well, I am. I've actually I went and got my laptop out, so at least I can see the show now.
Good.
So that's a little bit of an improvement. So without further ado here, we are going to introduce Gilda as soon as I get the microphone open. Hello, Gilda. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Well,
good evening, Gilda.
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine now, but it was kind of a rough start there. I've had severe computer issues here. But we're just so happy to have you with us. And I would like to just kind of kick off the ball here and ask you how you originally got involved in shamanic arts.
Okay. Actually, I got involved in shamanic arts, I'm not going to tell you how many years ago, but in my early 20s, because I was, my whole life I've been pretty sensitive and didn't have any guidance with what to do with it. And by the time I reached my 20s, I was really not doing very well because I was getting all this input. I'm pretty empathic, and I was getting all this input from everything and everyone around me, and I didn't know what was mine and what wasn't, and my adrenals were starting to toast. I was in fight or flight all the time, and you know, my digestion wasn't working, and I was a young woman, but you know, I was just going downhill. And I met my first teacher then. He was a Lakota elder, and he taught me how to discern or ordinary from reality, from the shamanic experience, and how to turn down the volume on my sensitivity when I needed to, and all of that. And I really do believe to this day, I really believe he saved my life. And he was quite an old gentleman when I met him, and he crossed over while he was training me, and so I just kept looking for teachers and finding teachers, and that's how I got started.
Wow. You know, it is, that's a really important point for people that are very sensitive and empathic, is learning how to turn it off, because it's a wonderful gift, but 24 hours a day can be a little much, especially if you're you know, younger and don't have any background in what's going on. So there was probably some disorientation for you until you got things like straightened out from your teacher.
Yes, it was very disorienting. I was most comfortable, of course, alone or out in nature, but it was all the input from the people around me that I just couldn't filter or figure out where it was coming from, or if it was mine or anything else. And so everybody's suffering became mine, and there's a lot of suffering going on out there. So.
Oh yeah, well yeah, it's completely widespread. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do. There are different levels of suffering, and some is, you know, easier, I guess, than others. It depends on what level you're emotionally, mentally, spiritually. There's all kinds of levels where people have challenges. So how can shamanism help you discern what's out of balance and where these feelings are coming from?
The way shamanism can help with that is because it is an earth-based practice, and being an earth-based practice, it uses the elements of the earth and the earth's toroidal field itself to reestablish balance. And once you can come back into balance, then it's pretty easy to tell what's you and what's somebody else, as long as you can stay, you know, learn to use the shamanic methods or rituals to find balance, to cast a circle, to find your center, and to ground into the earth, then it's a lot easier to discern. Plus, shamanic healing can help you remove the things in you that are triggers and imbalances, and make you clearer, a clearer channel, so you can know when you're channeling something through versus just being bombarded with it.
And I think that's pretty widespread, especially in the starseed community, is not being grounded enough. A lot of us are just barely here with our feet on the ground. So definitely connecting with the earth is the best way to deal with that. And this is covered in your book, correct?
Yes, it sure is. And one of the things that the starseed community deals with is, because the orientation is upwards, the chakras above the body are opening up, but the ones below the body haven't necessarily. And it's just like a tree. If their roots don't grow as far into the ground as their branches grow up, they'll windfall. And so I think at this point, we're a lot of us being challenged to really ground into the mother, the feminine energy, and open up the chakras going down as equal as the ones going up. And that's in there too.
Are you saying that there are chakras, you know, as above, so below, that there are, if there's seven chakras in the physical body, then there's seven below you as well?
Well, actually, my Celtic teacher used to say that the Celts believe that the human spirit goes to the edge of the universe and beyond, and it's really more like that. So if you think of the chakras as being channels or focuses for light or for frequency, as we're now moving into a time of greater frequency on the planet, there's more light available. And so there's seven chakras in the body, but then there's an infinite number above and below the body that can respond to and open up with the increasing light that we're now being exposed to. But just like unused rooms, they get full of garbage and unprocessed emotion and all sorts of things like that. So it's we have to process in order to open them, and we have to open them in equal measure. But that's how we're starting to become enlightened. I call that chakra system the stairway to heaven.
I love that.
Well, that's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. And often I tell my clients the same thing, Wilda, is that, and Ariel, you're absolutely right, a lot of starseed are opening their upper chakras. They want to get more galactic. But, you know, we're here to be human and to connect with the planet. And at this time when we need to make our most effort, you know, to help the planet, we've got to be grounded to her. So, Wilda, that's absolutely right. And I love that idea of, you know, falling over because that's exactly what happens. And you can see that big old root ball sticking up above the ground. And that a lot of people do get out of balance and they enter a spiritual crisis. So anyway, continue. I just wanted to add that and lend my support. That's a beautiful, beautiful phrase you've got there.
No, thank you.
So you talk a little bit about the Mayan perspective. We have had much discussion, you know, in the last 3-4 months of 2012. And then ever since then, just like it says as the introduction to your book, it's like they're saying that the prophets were wrong. Nothing happened. It was just an ordinary day. Well, tell us why it wasn't.
Okay. And I'm sure everybody's heard about the Mayan calendar to nauseam. But I have to give you a little background on it. The original Mayans were both shaman and mathematicians. And the information that built the Mayan calendar, and it's still the most accurate calendar we have, is actually galactic information. And it measures and charts the frequencies that the planet's being bathed in as it is relative to the other heavenly bodies galactically. So that's why it's so accurate. And as we move through the universe, different frequencies affect us. Like we think of our moon, okay? The moon changes the tides, for crying out loud, regulates the cycles of all the women on the planet. So if that little tiny rock up there has that much of an effect, what about these galaxies moving through our neighborhood? What about, so that's the relativity that the Mayan calendar was charting. Within that relativity, what happened and has been happening around this time is we're entering into the age of Aquarius, which is another form, the horoscope is another way of charting galactic influences.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also coming through a place in our universe where there's this high-frequency particle of light. Barbara Hand Clough spoke about this in her book. It's called the photon band. And as we're moving into the age of Aquarius, we're also entering, our sun is entering into the photon band of high-frequency particles. Add to that, on top of it all, through the precession of equinoxes, our North Pole is now being directed towards galactic center. Now, in the center of galactic center is a great big old honking black hole. And anytime anything gets close to that black hole, matter gets close to that black hole, it gets sucked in. But matter is never created, nor is it destroyed. It gets transmuted into gamma rays, X-rays, radiation, and that gets spewed right back out. So it's so strong that we're able to measure this from the planet's surface. And if we can measure it from the planet's surface, of course it's having an effect on the planet's surface. All these things coming to a head at the same time was what the Mayan calendar was charting. And that's moving from the fourth world frequency, or the matrix that was holding the fourth world together, into the fifth world frequency, which is what we're moving into now. And so we are indeed going through horrific changes. It's happening all over the place. But it's just not exactly the way we interpreted it.
Well, right. Yeah, well, to quote Lavendar, nobody said what it was going to look like. But it is happening. It is happening. And I suppose there are so many mitigating factors that the same energy can hit you know, 1,000 people, and depending on where they're at, what their consciousness is, what their circumstance, their geographic location, it can have that many different manifestations, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and that's such a wonderful point, because it takes every rung to build a ladder. And so all of us just suddenly popping into nirvana on 12/21/12 was a bit simplistic. Really, I like to think of it this way. In the age of Pisces, Christ was born. In that same age, under those same influences, so was Hitler. So it's like each frequency, each reality, if you will, has to have a representation for the entire spectrum of realities to be present. And so each of us has a frequency within which we relate to the whole. What's happening now is that is becoming a much broader band, and those of us that came at this time to focus the higher frequency so that that part of the band is here are processing in order to do it. But it doesn't mean that's everybody's path, nor should it be.
Right, right. You know, there has to, like, just like you use the analogy, rungs of a ladder, if everyone's on the same rung, then we don't have a ladder. Yeah, that's true. Wow. So how would you, let me just back up a little bit here. How does this interface with or aid spiritual evolution, these frequencies?
Okay. Our personal power is limited by our lack of mobility. So let me define shamanism for you, if you don't mind, because we're going to need this. And this is my definition, not the anthropological one. But I see shamanism as an organized set of rituals that helps the individual manage matter at the quantum level. So basically, the rituals are set in place to help us focus our natural ability to work in the spiritual realm, which is the quantum level. But we are limited in our ability to do that by our frequency. As these frequencies rise planet-wide, it gives us the opportunity, not the obligation, but the opportunity to process out what limits our frequency, because this higher frequency is now available, a more expansive frequency. It's going to start rattling the places in us that don't move with it. We can either go further into denial or move with it. If we move with it, we clear the things that are limiting our frequency, and we have more mobility. The greater our mobility, the more personal power we have at the quantum level. If you can manage matter at the quantum level, you can manifest.
Well, can you just expound on that? I understand what you're saying, but I would like to have it have you just present it, because I understand the manifestation at a quantum level is a direct match for whatever your frequency is. So if your frequency is scrambled, your manifestations are going to be off as well. So
exactly.
I guess it is an attunement to a deliberate frequency.
Yes. Einstein said reality is frequency, and that's all there is to it. You match the frequency of the reality you want, and you can't help but get that reality. This is not... what was the word he used? This is not, anyway, he says it's physics. It's not metaphysical, but it's physics, okay? And that's paraphrased. But that's exactly what we're looking at, is that when we have more mobility, we can match the frequency of what we want to create. But the key is intent. And if we can set our intent that we want something to happen, and we have the mobility and the integrity within ourselves as far as our frequency goes, then we can create that frequency at the quantum level. Creating that frequency at the quantum level creates a matrix around which matter gathers, okay? And that's how we as a culture create our own reality. And as individuals, we create our own reality. But during the time that we were in lower frequency time, we didn't have that kind of mobility. And that's why the fourth world was one of more of a parasitic existence, where dog eat dog, you have to take energy from somebody else, we have to kill to live. And the beauty of having the higher frequency of the fifth world available now is that we have the opportunity to move into relationships of synergy and win-win, because we can manifest for ourselves rather than have to take it from other living things.
And how does emotion play into that?
Well, there's four levels to our being: physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And they all have frequency, and they all vibrate at a different frequency. But just like low C, middle C, high C on a piano, they're in harmony with each other. So our physical is the densest. It's matter. It moves the slowest. Next is our emotional realm. Next is our mental realm. And then finally into the spiritual realm. But it's a continuum. And if they aren't in harmony with each other, that's when we get the chaos, the disharmony. So we have to stair-step all of our healing from the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual realms, stair-step them or spiral them up so that we keep moving through the things that limit us on all four levels. And so emotions would be one of those. And what we do with our emotions here on the planet is they've been used we're taught to stuff them, not express them. It's not okay to get mad. It's not okay to be sad. So we stuff our emotions, but then media pulls us around by our stuffed emotions. And so it really controls the masses, and also there's things that feed off of emotion. So if we can process out the emotions that we've stuffed and not expose ourselves to programming that's detrimental in that regard, we can step up our emotional realm to where it's more balanced and interactive rather than jammed.
Totally agree with that. I was thinking of a case where people who think that they're doing the intention, they are trying to manifest in the third dimensional world, and their words are appropriate, and their desire is definitely there, and then after they get done with the ritual of it, then they'll be talking to someone and canceling their own manifestations because their emotions are governing their words and thoughts. So that's what I was kind of wondering how that works into the manifestation with the law of attraction. Because I believe that you have to carry an emotional frequency of gratitude, of joy, of lightheartedness, because you can make a positive affirmation, and then but if in your soul and your spirit people say, well, I can't help how I feel, so how would you advise them to have some help on how they feel, because it's canceling a lot of people.
Right, and it's not just our feeling realm, it's also our belief system, and oftentimes we think we know what we want, but we're just really creating solutions. And you made a really good point where you said about gratitude, because everything begins with intention, but if it doesn't end with gratitude, you're not going to manifest, because that's what transmutes everything into the form that we're trying to create. But manifestation is blocked, and intentionally blocked, quite frankly, on all four levels of our being, from our blocked emotional realms to our blocked belief systems, to the chemicals and preservatives and all that stuff that's in our food that limits the frequency of our body. So, there's a lot of blocks on all sorts of levels. But I think one of the things that is, to me, one of the keys right now is we are not in agreement with ourselves. So I might think I want something, but that's really not what I want. I'm creating a solution, and there's another part of me that I'm unconscious of that's actually afraid to have it. So say, for instance, if I learned growing up in my family it wasn't safe to show up, it wasn't safe to shine, I might really, really, really want to be a singer, but when I get trying to stand up on stage, my system says that's life-threatening because somebody's going to knock you down for that, and so I will unwittingly sabotage the very thing I'm trying to create in order to stay safe. And that's an example of soul loss, and the cure for that is spiritual healing or shamanic healing in the form of soul retrieval.
Ah, so give us some methods I'm sure that you're going through this in the book, and I don't want anybody to just skip buying the book and try to glean from a synopsis here and put anything into practice. But what would be some of the methods that you would use as a shaman to help people clear those blocks?
Great. One thing that we offer through the school and through my company is we have long distance shamanic healing classes. We also have online classes for learning to journey, and those are two major keys. And I speak about both of those in the book. I'm going to start with the journeying first. If you can learn to do a shamanic journey, you can access information to see what's about to take form within the quantum level and find your sweet spot within it. It's one of the most personal, empowering things that a person can learn. Because the shamanic journey is a method by which the frequencies or what's about to happen at the quantum level is paints a story in the imagination or the shamanic metaphor. When interpreted, you can get a pretty good idea about, okay, if I do it, this is going to look this way. If I do that, it's going to look that way. And what it does is it gives you a tool by which to make informed decisions about how you're going to lead your life. The soul retrieval that's available through the shamanic healing, the long-distance healing, can reconnect you with your natural frequencies where you've had to disconnect in order to survive in the world. And it's it can move you beyond limitations, where the other one can help you dance around them.
And some of us are very good dancers. Yes.
Well, that's just wonderful. I wanted to indicate, and I want to talk to you a little bit about soul loss so that our listeners understood a little bit more about that. I'm a shamanic practitioner as well, and I just wanted to tell you that I was, and just to demonstrate how common it is, people are unaware of it. I was speaking the other day with a woman, young woman in her 20s. We were discussing her empathic abilities, and she told me, she said, you know, I've always been empathic. And she said, I remember a time in grade school, I was in second grade, and she said, a little boy in class made fun of me, and I felt a part of me go right out of my heart. She said, I lost myself in that moment. I just sort of, it all went out of my heart. And I said, you're describing your soul loss, you know. And can you talk a little bit about that? Because this happens so often in such innocuous ways, excuse me, that people are not only uninformed about this happening, but it's really quite common and happens in the most unassuming circumstances. Would you talk to a little bit to the audience a little bit about soul loss and what that is?
I'll be glad to.
And
I've never liked the term soul loss, but I use it because it's universal. But we don't lose our
souls. We can say fragmentation. What term do you like?
Well,
that's
use
right.
Soul
we
loss.
Really don't lose our soul. That's correct.
Yeah, I do use soul loss because it's universal, but
right,
I always like to
right.
give a little disclaimer that we don't lose our soul.
That's good. I'm glad
you
said that. That's accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. So just
so what we do is we disconnect from a part of our natural expression in order to survive. And this starts right away. As soon as we're born, just basic socialization is systematic soul loss. Okay? We have to disconnect from some of our natural expression in order to live in society and to be accepted in society. And that's a sad thing for parents to hear that, gee, your major job is fragmenting your child, but to a certain extent it's true. And a certain amount of soul loss is necessary for us to communicate and to live in this reality, and it's fine. But then trauma happens to us, like you described to the lady that said that she got criticized and just felt part of herself leaving her heart. Trauma adds to the soul loss. Now, so say for it can be as simple as, okay, I got rear-ended in an accident, and all of a sudden I get hit three more times. Why? Because I've disconnected from my right to be in that safe bubble. I've disconnected from my right to be the one that doesn't get in an accident. It's as simple as that. But because we've almost eradicated shamanism on the planet, we have no way to reconnect. So, you know, when I'm living in my family of origin, there's certain things that probably I can't express there. It's just the way the family learns to get along, and I find my place within it. However, when I move out on my own, it'd be lovely to reclaim my right to some of these things that I probably had great strengths in but didn't fit in the family. But we have no way of doing it in this society. And when we look at it at the quantum level, it's another level of our frequency that's compromised, whether the soul loss is about an emotion that we've had or about something that we said. All of it starts to impinge the toroidal fields of our chakric system. Our chakric system is where we interact with the quantum level on a daily basis, and so it compromises our personal power.
Well, that's just very well said, and I just get filled with such love with what you're talking about, because people just need to be so reoriented to the planet, and this is why I love shamanism so deeply, so profoundly. What you just said was just absolutely right. And talk to us a little bit about why shamanism is important in modern life. Can you do that?
Oh, you bet.
Yeah.
I think it's like the missing link, because without the ability to reconnect to our birthright, to our natural expression, to our frequency, we can't realign with life. We can't realign with the way the planet works, and we certainly can't evolve with the increased energies that are hitting us right now. I like to akin it to an airplane when we were trying to break the speed limit, the sound barrier. They used to have these, still do. They're great for low-level flight. They're bi-wings, and they've got rivets hanging off of them all over the place and exterior landing gear and cables and all that. And they're great for low, slow flight. They're still used for aerobatics. They're still used for crop dusting. But when they used those same models and tried to break the sound barrier, they found after a particular speed that they would start to shake apart because there was too much hanging out there. They had, you know, and that's how we learned about aerodynamics and, you know, the way we build our cars now even. So they had to recess the rivets. They had to go down to one wing. They had to basically build a streamlined aircraft before they could break the sound barrier. Well, what's happening right now is we as individuals are being bombarded with much more rapid frequency. And everything in us that's not in integrity, that's not in our natural expression, the way we came, is starting to shake loose. It's starting to rattle. And people start to destabilize. So with shamanic healing, as these things start to rattle, we can look at, okay, what's standing between me and this next frequency, get the shamanic healing, and move up to the next frequency because we've reconnected with what the frequency is natural for us and not having to live through compensation. Every time you lose a part of yourself, you have to compensate, and it's those compensations that are rattling us apart right now.
Wow, that's just right on. That's just great. Mm-hmm. And Arielle, I just want to ask her one more question, then I'll let you do this. I'm sorry. Can you speak to us a little bit? I just wanted to ask her about time. You know, people are telling me always that time is speeding up, and people are really having a hard time coping. You know, in modern society, we've got so many demands. Things are getting far more complex. In fact, there have been studies that have indicated that knowledge is doubling in the world every 2 minutes. And, of course, the knowledge, the weight of that, of information, people processing information, technology, are interfacing with technology and are moving away from the natural environment is really, I think, a primary contributor to the disease state that humanity is suffering from. But be that as it may, people are complaining a lot about not being able to keep up. Do you find, Gwelda, that connecting to shamanism and finding balance assists people with flowing better with time in the time stream?
Oh, totally. I mean, because what they're talking about, this, you know, information or this knowledge increasing, you know, so quickly, that is, you know, the equivalent of all this extra light, all this more light that we're being bombarded with. And what we've done is we've restricted ourselves to the physical brain, thinking that that's our intelligence. But actually, as you open up the chakra systems, we no longer have to store things in the brain like the educational system teaches us now, but rather we can access it as needed from the Akashic records. That's how I'm able to do what I'm doing and what I'm saying to you. You ask me a question, I go get the answer. Okay. And so that's like the shamanic antidote to all this intensity. Is why we're having difficulty is we're trying to use the brain for something it wasn't designed to encompass, and that's this increase of light or this increase of knowledge.
Well, that's just great. I mean, that's profound. And that brings to my mind the need for silence. When you talk about accessing the Akashic records or opening up our frequencies, which are constant communication with everything, as you said, we go to the edge of the universe. We really are aware on all levels if we can remove those blockages and open ourselves and tune into the knowledge that is there that has no words. It doesn't have, you know, it's just a frequency we have a knowing. And instead of processing so much through our minds. And I think that I would love to see a time, and I'm anticipating this is coming, in a state of harmony when we're in harmony with nature, and we go back to silence and being at peace and at rest and in a state of balance. What can you tell us about silence and connecting in that way in a shamanic tradition?
My first teacher was pretty much amazing, and he didn't speak to me much. And I'd be chattering along behind him, babbitt. And finally he turned to me, he says, "You waste your words." He says, "They lose their power." And it took me so many years to understand that. And even if you look at a particular Lakota language, because my first teacher was Lakota, it's like one word describes all sorts of things. It tells you not only what it is, but what it's doing and where it's located. You know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
The economy of the use of sound, because words are frequency.
Right.
And if we just babble, 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 the frequency of our words drops, and therefore paying attention to them drops. And all the air noise pollution that we have around us is frequency.
Yes.
And it keeps us at a particular frequency. Then you talk about the radio waves and the microwaves.
Yes.
Those are also compromising frequency. So it's not just silence in the sound. It's silence on all the realms. I remember when 9-1-1 happened, 9-11. And my husband at the time was an air traffic controller. And I called him to let him know what was going on because they were in lockdown. The next day they had grounded everything. And I was amazed by the profound stillness of not having all the aircraft in the air and all the radio going back and forth. You didn't realize.
You can feel it.
How much of that you feel. And so we are constantly bombarded with static on all levels, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. And the silence, that still point of center, is where all time and all information resides.
That's exactly what I wanted you to say. That's exactly right. That is beautiful. And if we could just get our clients to understand that, you know, that what you just said, if you want to tap into your infinite power and your, you know, your potential, you've got to reach that still point, which shamanism offers that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so vital, among a million other reasons. But okay, Ariel, I'm sure you have some questions too.
Well, I do. As you were talking about this bombardment, I was thinking about a bedroom that I stayed in one time when I was visiting, that was in the basement, underground, no windows, completely surrounded by earth. And it was so still in there. It was like being able to just turn it all off. And
yes,
you know, I would love to have a room like that in my house where you can just go and kind of catch your breath in a way and get away from that constant bombardment with, I mean, cell phone towers and all of the above, the electromagnetic pollution on this planet is not getting a lot of attention, and it's probably the most serious detriment to a civilization that we have. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a shamanic ritual, and it's pretty common among all nations, and that's the casting of a circle or setting an altar, calling in the directions. And if you it's in the book. If not, it will be. if you do that simple practice morning and evening, it can kind of create that container for you in your home. We call it sacred space. And so that really, really helps, because what it does is you're aligning your intent and the ceremony with the toroidal field of the planet. And I'm sorry, that's big power there, you know, and it's balanced
right.
power. And so you can create a toroidal field or in your home or in your room that can field a lot of this stuff that's harmful to us.
And to think the ancients have been doing that for many thousands of years. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about the four directions?
Sure. When I'm casting a circle or when I'm working with the altar, when I'm teaching my students how to do that, I always make sure they work with a compass rather than the North Star, because what we're actually doing is everything expresses according to a toroidal field. The electromagnetic field around the Earth is a toroidal field. So if we set the altars north, in the same north as like a map, just like our planet's north, so we do it with a compass, and then we're aligning our intent with each of the directions, which leaves us in the center of those directions. What we're doing is we're using the power of the Earth's toroidal field to fire up a mini toroidal field within our environment by using our intent, the presence of the four elements, water, air, earth, and fire, center, neutral heart center, in the center of the altar, and then you have each direction has a charge, positive and negative. When you spin those directions, a positive and negative, around a neutral center, you generate power. And that's the basis behind every electrical generating plant on the planet. So what we're actually doing is we're coordinating with and aligning with the power of the planet, and then having our intent and our balance enhanced by that. That's what the point of calling in the directions is.
Well, you know, that is a type of ceremony that I had described recommending people to use on their solar return, their astrological true birthday, to do some kind of a ceremony or a ritual, set the field like that, calling in the four directions, calling in, your unseen loved ones, and then once you have that set, then you cast your manifestations that you want for the coming year. And that's what we do for solar return ceremonies. And that's exactly, I was like, well, that's perfect. It's perfect. Because during your solar return, there's a 10-hour window there where your blood crystals are vibrating at their original frequency. So you have like 1,000 times more ability to manifest during those 10 hours.
Exactly.
Wilda, would you talk to us a little bit about the importance of ceremony? Because that I know you're really good about that, and I think our listeners would benefit from understanding what ceremony is, why we need it, and so on. Could you do that?
You bet. Ceremony is the cornerstone of shamanic practice. And what ceremony does is it builds subroutines. Now, subroutine is a term that's usually used in computer science, but basically what it means is an organized set of steps that when, ritualistically repeated, becomes a unified step, okay? And that greatly shortens the distance between two places. With me so far? So what we do is we start out with very clear ceremony. Like, I have particular stones that I use in different directions. I have a candle I put in the center. I have an earthen bowl that I put water in. So I'm using this ceremony to call in the directions. I do it again and again and again. But there comes a time when I own it. In other words, all I have to do is intend it, and it is so. So I intend it, and that toroidal field immediately forms around me. This is what this is another one of those stairways to heaven, in that if we can be ritualistic, and I mean that in a good way, about ceremony, about honoring, about reconnecting with the earth, about giving gratitude for everything that we have every day, it raises our frequency, it increases our personal power. Another thing that we've really lost in ceremony is that we no longer do life passage ceremonies. Children never know when they're adults. Elders never know when they're elders because, we have birthdays, but, this intentionally releasing our responsibility towards our children as small children and honoring them as young adults, those kind of ceremonies literally free up enchantments that are on the children. And most of us have those enchantments on us until we die.
Oh, that's so important to bring that up. That's exactly right. We have no rites of passage in this society that are healthy, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And so shamanism reintroduces that, hopefully.
Right.
That is a beautiful point, and that's something that I grapple with. I think about that. Our young people really need that, and our elders as well. So all of this is about returning really to sanity. Do you know there was a study done, and I can't quote it to you, but I just heard about it, that they had claimed that 50% of the European population are clinically mentally ill, 50%. Clinically.
Well, it's probably more of that
ill
in the States, I would say.
That's right. But, what does this come from, Gwilda? It comes from being out of balance.
Exactly.
And shamanism is the antidote for so many things that ail us. And unfortunately, it requires, but it does require great shifts in the way we look at the world, our worldview, our perceptions, returning to the ancient ways that were healthy. Not all ancient ways were healthy, but natural modalities and a connection with the animals and the plants and the planet and the water, and forfeiting a lot of our imitating technologies, sort of the unreality of the way that we live in the modern world, and getting back to what is real.
Yes, that's so important, and that's one of the many things that totally compromises our frequency. And I was talking about how our chakra system is the way we interact with the quantum level. Well, each of our physical chakras is anchored in an endocrine gland. And, of course, they're being targeted. So we're in artificial light all the time, okay, sitting in front of a computer screen all day, sitting in front of a TV all night, and turning on artificial lights, keeping the shades drawn so that nobody looks in our house. So we're rarely exposed to the natural cycles of light. As a result, our pineal gland has really atrophied, and our melatonin levels are off, which messes with our sleep, which also creates carcinogens. But the pineal gland is the center of the crown chakra, so our connection upward is being compromised just by that little practice.
Absolutely.
And I can go on and on and on.
And on mm-hmm. and on, yes, indeed. Yep, that's right.
So say, for instance, all the hormones in the milk and in our, the leaching through the plastic containers that we have our food out of, all of that compromises the sex hormones. That compromises our ability to manifest our will at the quantum level.
Yes. Oh, wow. That's right.
We are being poisoned slowly on almost every level, and being able to see that and take countermeasures is really that's what we're talking about. There's the things in our food supply. There are the pharmaceuticals, the electromagnetic pollution. All of this has to be balanced out in order for us to continue that upward thing, the upward thing.
Right. You know what you mean?
Yeah.
But, this is what's so beautiful about shamanism, and we all want to change the planet. We all want to, create a reality that is sane and beautiful and in harmony and is spiritual and full of light. And shamanism is a path to that, because as more people claim their power, which I don't know of a more effective method to do that, frankly, but as more and more of us claim our power in this way and become centered around what is real, this is going to have a collective effect. And also, haven't you found that, Gwilda, that more and more people are interested in shamanism? They're drawn to it. They feel connected to it because they're being led, in my opinion.
Yes, it's amazing. I am actually a preceptor for the University of Colorado School of Medicine. They send their doctors to me to have me teach them about the interface between shamanism and allopathic medicine. And it's one of the top teaching, medical teaching universities in the country. That tells me things are changing.
Well, absolutely, but I'd like to know how it is that the University of Colorado became so open-minded. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think it's the light. I think it's the light. You know what I mean? I think everybody is responding to the light, each according to their own gifts.
Yes.
But it started almost 30 years ago. I started interfacing with medical doctors in my practice. I do medical intuitive, and a lot of them used me for that. But also, some of the doctors that I worked out of their clinics would see the results that I would have with difficult patients, and we started referring back and forth. One of them was an instructor, actually, at that university, is an instructor there, and he started sending his students to me. So the young doctors have to shadow a doctor as part of their education, and he would facilitate four of those a year, and he would have it. I would donate some time, and he would send them to me, and I would, educate them on this. Well, I've been doing that for years and years and years and years for him, and one of them went back to the university and said, "You've got to get a hold of this woman." And the university actually contacted me, and they had started this class. It's for alternative medicine, class on different alternative medicines, and they got me into that one.
Wow.
And that's how it all started.
Wow, that's just fantastic. Did you ever work with the National Institutes of Health? They do a lot of alternative studies.
I would really like to. Yeah, that'd be fun.
They do that, and they've conducted studies on shamanic drumming and actually had baseline statistics about the positive effects of shamanic drumming, and they have studied various practices in the alternative field. But anyway, that's the only thing that I was aware of, the National Institutes of Health. I wasn't aware that there was actually a university that had opened up to that. And I would say that's due to a lot of your credit to your work, that preceded you and that opened the door. So that's just wonderful that you were able to accomplish that. And the doctors are coming along, are they? I mean, this is tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I have some of them that have become my students. I have some of them that think I'm absolutely a quack. You know, it's each according to their own ability, and they need to be where they need to be.
Right,
but
exactly.
Some of them just get turned on by the possibility. Because where I'm dancing with this is I'm able to bring it into physics. I'm able, you know, and some of my best students are physicists because it does line up. You know, when you start looking at the deep earth sciences like quantum physics, quantum mechanic physics,
absolutely.
All this stuff lines up. It totally
does
lines up
perfectly. You can't argue with it.
Exactly.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so I've been able to express it that way because I have a background in science, and you know, I did some pre-med for my degree in psychology. So it's like I'm able to speak that language and yet speak the language as it is in shamanism and bridge the two together. And I think that's been real instrumental. I'm just really grateful that I was allowed to do that.
Well, you have to be having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I am.
I mean, really, this is just a wonderful expression of your soul to do this work and to also be a bridge between science and spirituality in this way and to train these young scientists. You know, the science of spirit is wonderful, just wonderful.
It is. It's an exciting time to be alive when we can stand at the precipice of this kind of a union.
Would you talk to us just a little bit about shamanic healing in the sense of, let's just talk a little bit about maybe extraction physical ailments that occur. Can you give us a case history of someone maybe that you've worked on where they were having physical demonstrations and extraction served to solve the problem? Or can
sure,
you give
be glad
an example?
To.
Because I know that a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with this in a depthy way.
Yeah. Extraction has a lot of woo-woo around it because there's a lot of methods of doing it that are pretty dramatic. But the bottom line is there's incompatible frequencies take up residence in the body someplace and cause localized pain and illness. And I love to give this simple demonstration because it was actually a referral from one of my physician friends. And there was this little boy that always got ear infections no matter what they did. The poor little guy got ear infections. And so they, you know, suggested me to the mother, and she came to my office, and she had her daughter with her and her son. And her daughter was, 5 years older than the son. The son was maybe 2. And she brings him in, and, you know, I go into journey and say, okay, what's necessary? They say, well, you need extraction from his ears. There's, you know, definitely there's something there that's incompatible with his frequency. But as I was getting ready to do that, I suddenly saw the little girl staring at the back of her brother's head and just this venomous look in her eyes. And he had these little ears that kind of stood out a little bit, you know, and he had a real short little haircut. And I said, you don't like your brother's ears, do you? And she says, no, they're ugly. They stick out. And all my friends, I'm embarrassed. Okay, we have a clue. I hate his ears. I hate them, she says. And it's like she'd been waiting so long to just really voice that. You know, it was just really, you know, because I guess her friends had made fun of her because her brother looked like Dumbo, right? This is the kind of stuff she was dealing with. So here the little girl had been casting these negative inundations. Anytime we focus on someone with a negative thought, it does have impact. And if somebody is constantly doing that, it has a negative impact, and this was a perfect example. So just doing the extraction on the boy wasn't as big a healing as doing the soul retrieval on the little girl so that she didn't hate her brother's ears anymore.
Well, that's beautiful. That's a great story. That is a great story. And, you know, a lot of our starseed will complain. They'll say, well, you know, I haven't been feeling well or they have an issue, thinking maybe it's their own energy. You bring up something very important that we can sometimes suffer from energy that's been projected at us by another person's thoughts. And, you know, in ceremony, we clear out our energy fields and make sure that we have good boundaries so that we're not influenced by those kinds of energies and a whole other array of energies that we're absorbing all the time if we're not aware, you know, of what's impinging on our energy field. And you started off this program by saying that We know what is ours and what isn't by being in our center. That helps us to be aware of energies that belong in us and those that don't. So that's all very important stuff. And that's a really good example of, and that's coming from children. You wouldn't think that a child could be able to project that kind of energy that would have that kind of impact. But what do you know?
Well, they're less fragmented than we are, therefore they're more whole and probably have a bigger kick.
Isn't that right? Now, that's something to think about. It's exactly right.
And
yes.
These kids have extra strands of DNA. They came in more powerful, more aware, with more potential abilities than we did. So,
yes, and the reason for that is, I'm sorry.
Consideration.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because they came in as a time of greater light. We all come with a huge amount of light, but when we come in the darker times, we have to leave a great portion of ourselves not incarnate because it can't be accommodated here. And that's why we have that memory wipe when we come in. So much of us can't come in. But these ones that are being born now that are coming in this time of greater light, that's why we're seeing all these gifted ones. And there's shamanic healing that I've been doing for people that were wanting to evolve. Now we can bring through some of the light that we had to leave behind back when we couldn't incarnate with it, but it's now like a little cache there that's available for us to use to evolve. It's exciting
times.
That's
so true. That's just beautiful. So many people have been under the covers, so to speak, smuggled light, you know. They just haven't been able to bring it all in with them, and you're absolutely right. Now we can call on that light and bring it forward, and this is an exciting time. We really have so much potential to bring forth in our lives. And it's so much easier now than it was, although there's still challenges, but it's a great time to be here. Can you tell us a little bit about what you talked about, soul retrieval? Can you tell our audience what that's all about?
Sure. Soul retrieval, again, is an organized set of rituals that helps the practitioner go and find where a person has disconnected from their natural expression. They align with that, the frequency of what they've disconnected from, bring that frequency back for the person to attune to. The person attunes to it at the quantum level, and then they need to integrate it down from the spiritual, which is the quantum level, to the mental, emotional, and physical level, and at which point it can be manifested in their life. Then they manifest real and lasting change in their lives. So it's not imposed, but it's very profound, and I'm very, very careful with like our long-distance program. I have tapes, recordings, tell people how to integrate, writings up there. So really starting to re-educate people on how to reclaim these parts that can be brought back for them. And it is amazing how life-changing it can be. What determines what soul part or what part of us we realign with is basically the person's intent for their life. So I set my intent to bring back whatever is standing between this person and their intent at this time. And so it's very specific when you know how to operate in that way. It's very specific what comes back, and it starts removing the blocks to what they're trying to manifest.
That's just beautiful. I wish everyone could experience this. We just need more people to experience this. Do you work a lot with those that are mentally ill? Do you find that this helps with those conditions as well?
Well, shamanism is the last stop for the desperate, so I've worked with just about everything, okay? But what I do find, and this is a word that I need to put out there, it really needs to be the first stop, because it's kind of hard to shovel poop with a feather. If you're working with quantum level energy, but the denser bodies are what's really, really hurting, you can't really filter that change back down through. So sometimes I'll find somebody whose brain chemistry is so far off that they're not going to be able to process this work. And that means I'm going to be overloading them by bringing it back. So I have a whole referral system. I'll refer them out to someone. And, you know, there's a time for drugs. There's a time to rebalance our brain chemistry to get us stable enough so that they can process the spiritual healing and then get off of the drugs.
Well, that's good. You're very conscientious about this. You've got a plan. That's great. That's great.
So let's say a person has gone through all this maybe rapidly and clearing things away and just starting a rapid ascent. They find that they have abilities and have reclaimed a lot of their power. but it happens so fast, what prevents them from misusing this power once they've got it?
Oh, that's such a good question. First, I'm going to tell you what I hold the school to is what I call the five basic laws of ethical shamanic practice. And the first law is shamanism works within the natural law. The second one is shamanism doesn't put energy where it doesn't belong. It doesn't. The third is it doesn't take energy away from where it does belong. The fourth is you don't work out without permission. And the fifth is shamanism does no harm. And that's how we keep shamanism out of the realm of sorcery, because they're pretty close. And what you're talking about, the misuse, is sorcery. But that's where we come from a personal agenda and try to torque this power to work, either impose energy on someone or take it away from somebody, or we work without permission. That's when you start to get into the sorcery realm. What's so beautiful is there are checks and balances that you can only misuse this energy so long before, because you're working against natural law when you're doing sorcery. You might be using natural law, but you're torquing it. It has a backlash in that. It pulls you out of balance. You're out of balance. Your frequency falls. You lose the personal power, and you don't have as much effect in the world. So there are these lovely checks and balances in place. Unfortunately, the person that seems to suffer the most from the misuse is the person at hand. I'll often see somebody raised to a particular level, really get excited, and they're not meaning to misuse it. They're coming from really good intent, but they think they know what somebody else needs. And it'll only go that way for so long, and then it'll crash on them, and they'll really go through a spiritual crisis. But they can transmute that and have that be part of their path, too.
That's
very well said.
And certainly, every single person's power ends where another person's free will begins. And if you kind of keep that in your mind, when I'm helping to guide people with their solar return manifestations, if you want a romantic relationship, you can describe the relationship, but you can't name names.
Very
beautiful.
Just exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit? Excuse me. Go ahead.
So with every manifestation, you can call it to you in how it makes you feel and how it. But if there's another person involved, that's where you really have to be careful that you don't cross that line. Because then not only will you not get what you wanted, you might have to pay a ticket or something. So, so we have to stay between the lines.
And as she said, ethical practice. That's right. Mm-hmm. Could you talk to us a little bit about power animals, Gwilda?
Oh, I love power animals. They're one of my favorite things in the whole world. When I give this one description of power animals, and that is they are in indigenous cultures, they didn't have a written language, and so they used examples in nature to teach with. And so power animals are actually, the power animals are a representation of the personal power you need to lead with at any given time. Now that sounds all well and good, and at one level of reality, it's absolutely true. However, each animal nation has its own frequency that it holds here on the planet. Some of those that are no longer on the planet are still present energetic energy field frequency-wise in the Akashic Records. And that's why different animal nations manifest at different times on the planet based on what frequency we're dancing with or what counterbalance we need. They create that counterbalance, and they hold that frequency as animal nations here on the planet for us. As individuals, when we get power animals, what we're doing is we're aligning with the frequency of those animal nations that supports us where we might be a little weak or we might be a little bit imbalanced. And so we think of somebody, oh, you have a totem. No, you can have any number of totems based on what you're doing, what your intent is, and what kind of power you need to be leading with. I see a huge correlation between the behavior of power animals and animals in ordinary reality. I have you want to hear a story about one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I like to tell my raven story. I'll tell you two raven stories. But the first one I tell about is I have learned that ravens will come to me in the feather, literally, and perch outside my window and caw in the window at me when there's something that needs my attention in ordinary reality. So one day I was sitting having tea in my dining area, and it's a bay window there, and I have a bird feeder out there. And the ravens don't tend to frequent the bird feeder. They perch on the light post outside. Well, this big raven comes. He perches on top of the bird feeder, and he's doing this dance because it's like got a copper roof, and it's really slick. And he's calling in the window at me. And I said, well, do you need me to journey right? I always go journey to see what they want. And obviously, he was very insistent, so I had to leave my tea behind. And I went and I did the journey. And they in the journey, they took my awareness as the crow flies or as the raven flies from here. I'm in Colorado to Wyoming in Casper, where my mother's home was. Took me in through her front door in spirit, of course. And I saw her sitting wearing a red robe, and she was sitting in her recliner, but her fingers and lips were blue, and her face was all swollen, her ankles were all swollen. And then I heard the raven say, your mother needs you. So I journeyed back to my body here, and I got up, and I got on the telephone, and I called my sister Lisa, and she says, we were just trying to get a hold of you. Something's wrong with Mom. We can't get her to go to the doctor. And I said, I'll be there, okay? So I called downstairs. My son was staying with me at the time. He was 16, and here's a word to the wise. You don't tell a 16-year-old boy with a 280Z, just get me there. I don't care what it takes. When we were pulled over, he was clocked going 120. We got there anyway, and when I walked through the front door, there she was, exactly in the position that I'd seen on journey, wearing a red robe with blue lips and blue and swollen ankles, okay? That's the kind of relationship that I have developed with ravens.
How
so
powerful.
I'm journeying with them, but also they will come in physicality and let me know when I'm needed somewhere.
Wow.
That is just a beautiful story. And I want our listeners to know that's just not uncommon. When you're really proficient at shamanic practice, your animals will help you in just such a way. And thank goodness you were responsive. I mean, you know, you're obviously deeply committed to shamanism and a true professional, and you responded, and it worked out. And so when our animal guides give us messages, we need to pay attention. And that's a beautiful example of what good things come when you listen and follow. Wow, that's a powerful story.
Thank you. And, you know, one of the important parts of that story was, yes, absolutely paying attention to the messages coming through the animals, but you notice the way I got the rest of the information was by using the journey practice in order to let the raven tell me exactly what it was trying to show
absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow, that's just beautiful. Wow, what a story that is. Mm. I saw one of your videos on your beautiful website, and where you speak to the audience, and you were carrying a red-tailed hawk. You want to tell us about that hawk?
Oh, that hawk's name is Takaya. Isn't she pretty?
She is beautiful.
Yeah,
she is beautiful. Is this a hawk that had been wounded and was in an animal preserve or a raptor preserve?
No. My daughter is a master falconer, and Takaya was
indeed.
Her hawk, and they hunt together, and, you know, they had a beautiful, and she's probably a bit of a familiar, were the truth to be known, but my daughter
well,
wouldn't admit it.
Well, I figured that, yes,
but
absolutely.
Anyway, one year I caught, you know, because I teach wilderness programs, I'm out in the wilderness a lot.
Tell us that story that you told on the video, would you?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I'm out there in the wilderness program, and I end up getting West Nile. I was one of the first ones to come down with it. I was pretty sick with it. I got, I was 3 months really getting totally over it. But also later that year, Takaya came down with West Nile, and she was failing rapidly. And we called the Raptor Rescue Center, and they didn't have good news for us. They said, you know, I'm sorry, but every animal, every raptor we're getting in here that has West Nile doesn't make it. We haven't saved a one. So we called the vet, and we got pretty much the same information, and she was really failing. She was getting so weak, she could hardly even stand on her perch anymore. So one day I just had all I could stand. You don't work this without permission. So I said, Laura, that's my daughter's name. I said, would you mind if I journey and get permission from Takaya to see if there's anything we can do shamanically? Because there's nothing else out there that we can do. We've tried everything. And she said, please do. So I, again, went into journey, and I journeyed to Takaya and asked her permission to work on her. And she gave it to me. So then I asked Spirit. I said, okay, so what can I do here shamanically for this bird? And Spirit says, well, you know, everything expresses according to frequency. I said, yes. And they said, so disease has frequency. And I said, yes. And they said, so you had West Nile. I said, yes. And they said, so your immune system found the frequency that counteracts the frequency of the disease. Offer that frequency to Takaya's immune system. So in the journey, I did that. The next day she showed improvement. 2 weeks later, she was on the mend. We didn't know if she'd ever fly again, but you know what? She's flying and hunting now, and she's still with us.
That is such a remarkable story, and I must say that this is not something that everybody needs to be aware of. This isn't something you would think of logically. This is so clearly guided by spirit, the information and the awareness that was given to you. Of course, I mean, it's so logical, but it's not something that you would think of with your natural mind or with your brain. Clearly, beautiful and accurate guidance from spirit. And what a wonderful gift. It's just wonderful. And as we move into the future, you know, allopathic medicine is undergoing a lot of breakdown, let's just say. The system is failing in so many ways. And people are going to need to rely more and more on natural medicine. That is my belief. And this is an example of how shamanic healing can work and does work in a very real way. So it wasn't an antibiotic that saved this bird. It was the frequency given through the shamanic journey.
Yeah, it's just amazing to see. And what's interesting is then several months later, my daughter's now husband, was fiancé at the time, came down with West Nile. He had it for 3 months, and he was dying, quite frankly. And finally, you know, you don't work without permission, so I'm gnashing my teeth. And finally he looks up at my daughter with one bloodshot eye, and he says, "Do you suppose your mother has anything in that medicine pouch of hers?" So I took that as permission and
wow.
Did the same thing for him that I had done for Takaya. Plus, I was directed to do a couple of soul retrievals for him at the same time. 2 days later, he was up and walking around. He hadn't been out of bed for 2 months, and he'd lost 30 pounds at that point.
Oh, that's just a wonderful story.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful story.
Yeah.
But this is what shamanism can do for us.
Yes,
and,
it is.
On so many levels, Gwilda, you know, physical, emotional, spiritual, on the quantum level, this is how I think we're going to make a better world.
I totally agree with you. And it's like there's a place for the coarser, but allopathic is the coarser way. And, you know, if somebody's really, really ill and their frequency is really, really low, shamanism isn't going to help them much. They need to have support until they can get their frequency up enough that shamanism can take the next step for them. So I think that there's really in this transition, this walk out of the matrix, if you will, there is the necessity for all of us. It's just that we have to be inclusive and honoring of one another.
Well, and it is about body, mind, and spirit. And what
yes.
you're doing is informing the allopaths that they're interconnected. And that recognition has long been needed. And so as we have more allopaths that are aware of this integrated reality of the human being and that we operate on many levels and as we increase respect for the spirit of the individual and include them in their own healing, you know, a lot of the qualities of shamanism that are respectful, that require permission and consent and that honor the spirit, as we get allopaths that are more mindful of that, it will become more beneficial than it has been, rather than strictly scientific.
Yes, it's
so
amazing.
It's bringing
it
balance.
Is the science of the future, isn't it?
Right, it is. It absolutely mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm.
And having the two of them in balance is what the Atlanteans are back now trying to accomplish, you know, in concert with each other. And when you first started talking, Gwilda, I was picking up this Atlantean frequency really early on in your interview here. So, and I'm feeling that it is that balance and the bridge that you are between, especially Western medicine and the shamanic practices, helping to break down those walls of separatism, where, you know, Western medicine thinks it's all that, and actually rather than thinking of the alternative people as the wackos, you know, really having some respect and taking a look and saying, okay, you have something that's valid and so do I, so let's work together and make something that's even better. I love it.
Yeah, that's that again, that's the, all the rungs out to create the ladder, isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It
That's
is.
Right.
So, let me give your website one more time, and would you please say your name for everyone? I'm not sure I did it correctly.
Sure. It's a challenge. My name is Gwilda Wiaka.
Wiaka.
And
Wiaka. Is that a native?
And you spell it. It is, actually. It's Lakota. Uh-huh. Wiaka is Lakota for feather. Tail feather of an eagle, to be exact. So we know where I reside.
So it's Gwilda. W-I-K, no, Y-A-K-A, W-I-Y-A-K-A, Wiaka.com.
That's correct, yes.
And I think that everybody should stop at your website and pick up a copy of your book, because I know we've just scratched the surface here, and I know that there's a lot more that you have to offer in your book. And
Gwilda, you also have
another
website.
We're going to be opening the phone lines for questions for Gwilda in just a few minutes, so you need to press 1 on your keypad. We already have at least one person waiting with a question for you. So
Ariel,
yes,
she has another website, findyourpathhome.com. Is that right, Gwilda?
Yes, that's correct. That's the website.
That might be easier if someone can't find it under your name.
Findyourpathhome.com. Yeah, you can get to me both ways. And that's I have a state-certified occupational school of shamanic arts, and that's the website for it.
Excellent. And you do have courses that are remote or long-distance, so you don't have to be right there
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I have online courses, and if people are wanting to do the certification program, we're restructuring them so they're in blocks and we can do retreats. So you can take the first block online, and then when you graduate from that, you can take the next block in retreat format, probably in Denver to start out with. But we've had a certified trade school for 10 years, I think, here in the state of Colorado. So it's tried and true. It's wonderful stuff.
Well, I know that Anastasia has been a practicing shaman for a long time. So and the two of you kind of sound, I mean, vocally, your voice prints are very similar to me. I thought, you know, these are like, you know, two peas in a pod here. Don't you think, you girls?
Well, it's been a pleasure working with you, I'll tell you that.
I would be happy to be in a pod with her.
Yes.
I would be glad to be counted as next to her. That's right. That would be a privilege.
Likewise.
Well, Gwilda, do you want to go to some questions, or do you have some other points that you would like to bring up?
Oh, I guess I just have to say the name of my book. It's So We're Still Here, Now What? Spiritual Evolution and Personal Empowerment in a New Era. So that's the one I have out right now. That's the latest one to come out. And so I just had to mention that. But otherwise, I would love to talk to some people.
Okay. Well, let me see if I get my little laptop here to work. I had a total disaster on my computer. It just got wiped clean, so I'm really having to two-step here. Okay, let me see if I get this button pushed here. We're going to be talking to Ralph as soon as I get your mic open. There you are. Hi, Ralph.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. What a wonderful show. And Gwilda, you're such a beautiful spirit just listening to you. And I had an opportunity to listen to one of your interviews from your site, and I was just wondering about I think it's transmuting frequencies. If you have some type of ailment, especially that may have emanated from a past life, and you can go back and kind of transmute that frequency to heal yourself, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. But the way that can be done is through soul retrieval, which is, of course, the shamanic healing technique that we've been talking about. And like I said, I have people that are trained through the school that do long-distance soul retrieval. And, you know, you can find that through the website. But if you have something from a past life, it can definitely be accessed that way, if it's what's standing between you and what you're wanting for this life.
When you say journeying, is that the same as having an out-of-body type of experience? Is that what journeying
yes.
is? Does it happen during is it sort of like a trance kind of thing, or do you can do it while you're meditating? How do you do that?
Okay, meditation tends to be more of a mind exercise, quieting the mind, where the shamanic journey trance operates through the landscape of the imagination. And the landscape of the imagination is where the metaphor is painted to make sense to the mind of what's happening at the quantum level. So it's not exactly like meditation. They're both very powerful modalities, but it is different than meditation. Out-of-body experiences are shamanic experiences. The beauty of the shamanic journey and learning how to control the shamanic journey is you can choose when you come and when you go and follow the basic laws so that you're staying, you know, keeping it clean and not violating anybody else's space. But, yeah, it's amazing how many skills out there are shamanic skills, from divination to water dowsing to being psychic to being intrinsic to astral projection, all of the above. And they all really do base back into the shamanic journey as a modality through responsibly wielding the skills.
Wow. So it seems that shamanism is like a holistic type of modality, and it's all inclusive, huh?
Yeah, it really is, because everything has a representation on the quantum level, and therefore shamanism can treat anything at the quantum level. So we heal person, place, and thing.
Wow, that's beautiful. I really look forward to reading your book, and it's been just a pleasure listening to you and gaining this minuscule amount of knowledge about shamanism. I had never really considered even looking into shamanism. I thought it was something that someone was just kind of blessed with, born with or whatever, but I didn't know that there was some, it was a modality that could be learned. So
absolutely,
I really appreciate
Sam.
It.
Oh, I appreciate
you. Much.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great night.
You too.
Thanks, Ralph. Bye-bye. And that was really, that's really a good point that Ralph made, because there are, I'm sure, a lot of people that believe that shamanism, that you have to have a certain rite of passage in your own soul evolution to get connected like that, to learn those techniques and practices. But you're saying that just like psychic ability, everyone has it. It's just undeveloped.
Absolutely. And some people are better basketball players than others, you know. So it's all are not created equal in this either. But very few individuals that I've ever met that I can't teach in a day's workshop how to do the shamanic journey. And that's so empowering, because then they can get their own spiritual information. And that starts the evolutionary process, because it helps them clarify their intent, helps them get answers as to how to dance what's happening in a really creative way.
Well, that's just so important, too, because people have been taught for many thousands of years now to look outside of themselves for answers in the Western civilization. And shamanism does teach people direct connection, to the divine. And that's what's so beautiful about it. And then as we become self-led, we become empowered. So
you've got it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got it. Well said. So when
and
do I get to interview you? Huh?
I'm sorry? There have to be different levels, you know, like in the martial arts, you know, like a shaman first degree and 15th degree. Are there not?
Yes, and what's so beautiful about that, though, is that like all the rungs of the ladders, every degree has a place of service and where it does better than a higher degree would.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up service, because that's what really shamanism is all about. It's, you know, you lose yourself in the service of others. That is really, really glad you mentioned that word.
Mm.
Yep. An opportunity to be of service, which is really why we're all here. And in my experience, there's nothing of the light in all of existence that doesn't exist to serve.
You've got it. That's that fifth world synergy that we're talking about.
Well, I had a question. This is a little bit off the current flow of conversation, but when you said that your first mentor was the Lakota man, and I wondered how did that connection happen, because generally there's not you just didn't walk onto a reservation and be accepted right off the bat.
No, this was so interesting. I was in my 20s, and I was in Laramie, Wyoming, going to college. And I was working my way through school, and at that particular time I was working at a truck stop in the evenings, waitressing to make ends meet. And it was a rainy evening, and this Native American couple comes to the door, and I was just about to close up because it wasn't 24-hour. I was just about to close up, but they were walking, and so I opened the door, and he indicated that their truck had broken down and wondered if they could use we had a payphone inside. This was before cell phones, obviously, use the phone to call his brother. And I said, of course. So they came in, and I said, well, have a seat. You can wait. You know, I've still got stuff to clean up. So he called his brother. He says, well, he'll be in a little while, and they were about to leave out into the rain again. And I said, I've got stuff to clean up. You know, why don't you just sit in here? And they were sitting there, and I go over to the coffee pot, and I realize, well, I'm just supposed to dump this down the drain. I thought, well, I'll give them, you want some coffee? Well, they did, so I gave them some coffee. And then I'm cleaning out the pie tin, and there's a piece and a half of pie that, again, same thing, you know, after the day's worth, you get rid of it. So I gave them the pie. And when his brother showed up, they get ready to leave, and he turns around to me, and they hadn't said two words to me except acceptance and thank you for the food. He turns around to me, and he took my hand. I thought he was going to shake it, and instead he puts a napkin in it. He says, you're going to need this. When you do, use it. Okay? And so after they left, I looked at the napkin. I was about ready to throw it out, thinking, what the heck was that about? When I realized there was a phone number written on the napkin. And it wasn't too long after that that I really, really, really went into crisis. Like I was saying, I was getting very ill. I couldn't tell whose was what, that sort of thing. And I got it dug around in my purse, and I still had that napkin, and I made that phone call. And he and his wife apprenticed me for quite a while.
What a beautiful story.
I'm so glad I asked you about that because, I mean, I have one of my closest friends is half Native American, and even so, there's some political things because she's not, you know, pure-blooded going to the reservation and seeing the, you know, her family. And it's just like, wow. I mean, from your picture, I mean, you do look Caucasian. Do you have Native American blood at all?
Yes, I do. I'm probably about a quarter. We're not real sure. My aunt has done a lot of genealogy, and she said that, you know, that we have Scots-Irish and Bohemian and Native American. She said there was two tribes. She knew one was Cherokee, but she didn't know what the other one was. But I personally don't have any, you know, proof one way or the other. And I don't worry about it so much. This is the time of the rainbow. You know, this is the time that we come to serve all nations. And I did. I caught a lot of flack for being white and female way back.
Well, I'll bet
you
did.
Yeah,
but it's time to mention that shamanism is a worldwide practice. It's not exclusive to Native Americans. It's been practiced all over the world.
Yes,
it's the oldest medicine on the planet.
It is
Celtic
40,000 to 50,000 years old. Yeah.
That's right. And so it's not. Yeah. It doesn't belong to the Native Americans. It is a worldwide tradition.
Anastasia, do you remember the program that we did where Lavendar talked about the link between the Celtics and the Native Americans?
Yes.
And that just, I mean, as soon as Gwilda said that, it just, like, came back to me. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm,
and there's
mm-hmm.
it goes through the Pleiadian link, the Cathar link, the Jesus and Mary Magdalene link, and it's all something in common with the Celts and the Native Americans.
Well,
and
recently they have done genetic studies. I haven't had a chance to talk to anybody about that, but geneticists have found a direct link genetically between the Celtic peoples and the Native Americans. There is a genetic component now that is there for us to recognize. So that's a very strong link on many levels. But shamanism
in that restaurant that evening, he saw who you were before you did.
Yes, yeah. I know one time he said to me, I didn't choose you. You were chosen for me. And I'm sure he struggled with the fact that I was a white, you know, a Caucasian female too. But,
but
he still taught me.
He honored his guidance. And that bespeaks a true shaman who can transcend bias and, right brain thinking and tune into spirit and do what's right regardless. And that was He was a good person, a beautiful person.
I'm sure I was a trial to him, I'll have to tell you, because I had no idea how to treat an elder or how to learn in this way, and he had amazing patience. But it certainly changed my life.
Well, that's just a beautiful story. Beautiful. Well, this has been a great show, Ariel.
It sure has. I'm can believe that I actually couldn't even think I was on the air when I first started talking. I was flipping out because the switchboard was blank, and I thought, this can't be. And then I realized it's because my computer crashing yesterday, and it's not all the way back yet. So I think that was before you actually got on the switchboard, Gwilda, but I had a few moments of terror.
I can imagine. Well, there's a lot of crashing going on.
All turned out fine.
Of course.
It did. And, Gwilda, you are just such a light. You are so focused and so strong and such a great service to the planet and to other people, and especially in the medical field. I just want to express my gratitude that you are among us.
Well, I'm so grateful that you guys are with us. You're doing a beautiful service here. You're lovely women, and it feels like I know you.
Well, it's just
a joy. It does, and I would love to have you back.
I would love to come back.
Yeah. I mean, we are getting ready for our Crystal Quest, and the heat's really getting turned up, especially since my computer was like the brain, the headquarters here, and it just fried yesterday, so... we are all kind of like scrambling to make deadlines here. So when we get back, I would love to have Lavendar will be back and have you on again and have all of us just have a wonderful discussion of anything we do.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, it will be. So, well, Gwilda Wiyaka, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart on behalf of everyone here at Starseed Radio Academy and Starseed Hotline for sharing this time with us. The website, Gwilda Wiyaka, which maybe people would have trouble spelling. What was the other one again, please?
FindYourPathHome.com.
FindYourPathHome.com. So
yeah.
I would like to encourage everyone to visit FindYourPathHome.com or Gwilda Wiyaka, and you can find that link on our show page as well, and go pick up the book. So thank you so much, and
we'll
look forward to having you back on the show. Thank you to Chris and everyone, Fiona, Lavendar, Anastasia, for joining us this evening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Everyone, please have a great week, and we will be back to our regular schedule on May 21st. So we'll see you then.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.